I'm Abby.
And I'm Allie.
And it's About Time for True Crime. Hi, how are ya?
Hey, you guys.
Happy day. Happy Tuesday.
Happy day that ends in Y, whatever day you're listening on.
Ooh, get 'em.
Ooh, get 'em. You know me.
How was your Cinco de Mayo?
Did you guys have a lovely time? Did you have Mexican food?
Do you have a margarita for me, please?
I know.
I'm so close. The second I can drink a margarita, it's over for you bitches.
She's not pregnant, by the way. She just has an ulcer.
Well, they're kind of they're not the same, but
yeah, they're really similar.
Yeah, they're really similar. I just can't smoke or drink or eat any fatty or salty or acidy foods.
Yeah, you can't have cold cuts. You can't.
Yeah, everything's awful.
Yeah.
Anyway, it's getting better. It is, but Gregory, my ulcer, is on his way out. The eviction process has started.
We love that.
All right. And I'm not a friendly landlord to that man.
Mm-mm.
No.
As you shouldn't be.
No, get out. It's my bot. It's literally mine.
Get out.
Get.
That's what I always say.
You do. You always say that to me. No, but I hope you guys had a great Cinco de Mayo. I am so ready to fuck up a margarita the second I can. So I hope you guys did in honor of me.
I will hold off until you can too, and we'll go together.
I will say I have like the very best friends in the world. I just keep sending, like, you know how Instagram is like this and a yap session, and they'll send you all sorts of different things.
Yeah.
I keep sending like the salsa and margs to people, and I'm like, please. And everyone's like, all right, we'll go the second you can. It's on me. I'm like, good. I don't want to pay for a single margarita for 3 weeks. Like,
it's true.
And I want so many margaritas. Not that we promote binge drinking. We don't do that here. But I do love a mango margarita.
Yes, and it's been like months since you've been able to have anything. So yeah, I think you've earned one.
I also just don't really drink.
I know. We're boring here. We really are.
We used to be fun young whippersnappers once. Now we hang out in fat pants with blankies and candles.
Mm-hmm.
We just spent a hot minute talking about like family parties.
Yeah, and like life as it is right now and just how odd it is. I was telling Abby this, but I'm going to tell you guys too. I just watched the movie Sinners, me and like millions of other people. It's incredible.
Sinner? I hardly know her.
Yeah. It is so good.
Yeah.
I didn't realize I had as big of a crush on Michael B. Jordan as I do.
Good to know.
And yet here I stand. He is an incredible actor, especially in this movie. He plays twins.
Ooh, I didn't know that.
He plays identical twins, so he plays two parts. And there is just such a noticeable difference in his energy and his mannerisms and everything as each twin.
Ooh.
Which is fascinating and incredible. And then Hailee Steinfeld, are you kidding me?
Yeah.
Absolutely incredible. And then I didn't know that I had this big a crush on Jack O'Connell, but how you doing, bud?
Hello, Jack.
Yeah. So I've got that going for me.
Yeah, you do.
And the cinematography is incredible. The score is incredible. Ugh. Just the actual like music that has come from this, like it reawakened something in me.
Yeah.
Because I've talked about this before on here that I was a little actress in my youth.
Yeah.
And very passionate and actually pretty fucking good. And it's almost like inspiring me to like want to do that again, to pursue that sort of part of creative piece of me.
I love that.
So if you're a casting director and you need a, 5-foot brunette powerhouse.
Yeah.
Hit me up.
You should. She's a cutie too. Can attest.
But I just think the movie's incredible and the way that it was done. I mean, it was casted perfectly. You know how some movies miss the mark?
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's like, oh, why this person for this role? Or like sometimes you think I would have swapped these ones or, like right people, wrong setup kind of thing. But this was just a 10 out of 10 out of 10. They just hit it out of the park.
I love that. And it's so fun.
It's a long movie. It's like 2.5 hours long.
Ooh, love.
And it wasn't long enough.
And normally, that's saying something.
Yeah, normally you get to a point where you're like checking the time. You're like, all right, when's this wrapping up?
Like, yeah, or like, how long have I been here?
Yeah. Yes, but it keeps you seated.
I love that.
It's, I would 100% recommend it. And
cute.
Yeah, that's all I have to say about that. Just if you're going to spend your money and go see something in theaters, I think it should be that.
It's worth it. Okay.
For sure.
Yeah, we've deemed this era the healing era. So I have been working on decentering my phone, which love means that. I have been petting my cat more. He is literally like, he's gotten to this point now where he's doing this thing where I lay down for bed. Like, and you know, I usually have like a little bit of reading time or like I do something before bed, a little before I like hit the lights. And he now will come up the second I lay down. He puts his ass right in my face. He lays down and I always like try to pick him up so his face is by my face. So mm-hmm. I'm like, like snugs with mom, love. And he'll like do it for a second and then he turns around and he puts his butt in my face. And then he pets me with his tail. My cat is not a cat. Like he doesn't have cat tendencies. He will literally sit there and like swish his tail, not in a like a flicky annoyed way, just like swish it over my face.
He hit you with an Uno reverse.
He did. He said, you know what? It is cuddle time, mom. I got you.
Oh.
And I'm like, oh, can you do this with not something that smells like your shit?
Yeah.
But I love him anyway.
That just hovered over your shit.
Yeah.
Like 20 minutes ago.
Thanks.
Yeah.
Thanks.
When he's not being feral, he's great.
He is. And you know what? I do think he really likes the new place. I think he's very sensitive to the feng shui.
Yeah.
You know?
Uh-huh.
So once everything got like unpacked and settled, he's been like a delight. He's really been loving it.
We love that growth for him.
Truly.
Yeah, we're definitely in our healing era and we're working on things that make us feel better and good and all the things that we want.
Pursuits and passions of the soul, you know?
Yeah, well, Abby and I were just sitting here talking about this. Just how like goal-oriented we've been for ever.
Yeah.
And now I'm at the first kind of break in my life in a decade of not having something so urgent that I am like, here's this, you know, goal I have by this time. And so, yeah, it makes me want to get back into like some passions. And
yeah,
I do miss that creative part of my life. And Abby and I are, I don't know if you knew this, but while we were very studious and academic, we also were like very artsy.
Yeah.
And involved in entertainment and have really enjoyed being able to make people laugh or make people feel something.
Yes.
And I don't know, maybe we'll explore that further as we get into our older years as, you know, 20-somethings.
I am excited. I think it'll be good. I don't know. I haven't really explored too much of that. You had like your artsy theater kid era. I just like lived in the art room. I almost went to school to be an art teacher, which I don't know if I've talked about on here.
Would have been incredible at.
So for me, it's just been like getting back to painting, like creating things. Maybe if you guys let me know down below if you want to see it. I did make a piece of my cat on a UFO with which I do think is pretty good. It's just funny. He's like gigantic on a teeny tiny little UFO in the sky.
I think we need to clarify. You didn't choose like a piece of your cat to put on the UFO.
No, I created
She made a piece.
Yes.
That is of her cat on a UFO.
Yeah, if that came across weird. I mean, I wouldn't put it past him to like hop on the world domination trend, but he certainly hasn't told me about it. And I know he can talk. He can. Just tell me, you bastard. I know you can.
He has a yappetite just like his mama.
He goes,
he does.
He sounds like he smokes a pack a day.
Yeah.
It's really cute.
It's true. All 6 pounds of him.
Yeah. Hey, he's 8.
Oh, okay.
But
look at him grow.
Yeah. So that's where we're at. Let us know how you guys are doing.
Yeah. What's involved in your healing era?
What are you doing this spring? How are you coming back to life? This is where we're at. But we also have quite the case to get into today, I think.
Oh, yes, we do.
So without any further ado, ayoo-hoo, pod's on. Come get it.
You guys. Well, welcome or welcome back to your favorite true crime podcast, About Time for True Crime.
Aww.
We are going to head into it. So this is your notice to please keep your hands, arms, feet, and legs inside the pod at all times because it just gets bumpier from here, folks.
Yeah.
If you haven't already, we highly encourage you to listen to part one Otherwise, this isn't going to make a ton of sense to you. But to recap, last week we discussed John's early life, his upbringing, his relationship with his parents.
Mm-hmm.
We talked about how it seems that John's views seemed on one side of the pendulum swing and he felt the world was going the opposite way, and how the majority of people are often found in the middle when you split the difference. He was an extreme version of an extreme version.
Right.
We also talked about how, as a child, John was the definition of seen and not heard, and he was rarely seen at that. John adhered to strict principles, but lacked the skills to adjust, grow, or accept anything different from his beliefs, and then struggled with his wife and children committing what he believed to be atrocious sins. Financially, the family was in ruin, unable to afford their 19-bedroom mansion, but to admit defeat in this arena, or any arena, really, was a fate worse than death, apparently.
Ugh.
Helen's condition worsened as she entered the later stages of syphilis, and she had stopped attending church with him, which was both infuriating and humiliating in John's eyes. And his oldest child, his daughter, Patty, identified now as a witch and was deviating far from their faith. His daughter especially was leaning into the 70s movement, and when you consider others who maybe shared some of his views, they might have disagreed with some of what was going on at the time. They didn't behave the way John behaved. They didn't do what he did because he went to an extreme.
Yeah.
His mother, who now lived with them, and his wife didn't get along, and his mom did not miss an opportunity to tell him that she thought he made a poor choice. He was let go from his very well-paying job. He was like the VP of some bank.
Making buku bucks.
He was
to get a friggin' $50,000 house. I'm bitter. Sorry. Keep going.
I know. He was making an incredible amount of money. And yeah, he could have shaken his ass for Kohl's cash. Like, he was doing great. But he didn't tell his wife that he lost his job. And instead of having that conversation, which would have been difficult but absolutely necessary, he just pretended to still go to work. He just got up, put on a suit and tie as he did every day, and left the house and killed time somewhere else while looking for another job, but could not own up to the fact that he was not bringing home the bucks the way that he was. And then he finally did land a job which paid him significantly less, which, if he could only barely not afford the house before, he could really not afford it now.
Yeah.
And with this, John List was feeling like he lost control over all things in his life, and these were all things he felt like he should have control over. When I left you last episode, we were talking about December of 1971, where police had made a very gruesome discovery.
Yes.
And we're going to get there, I promise, but we're actually going to rewind the clock just a little bit so we can figure out just what that gruesome discovery was.
So rude. Okay, fine.
So to set the scene, it's early November 1971.
Mm-hmm.
John's been preparing.
Oh, like D-Day preparing cans of food on the shelves, non-perishables?
No, significantly worse, because he wasn't planning on anybody being alive to eat that food if he were gathering supplies. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
First, he canceled mail deliveries and any recurring visits, like milk deliveries and stuff like that.
Hmm.
I believe with the mail, you could only put it on like a 30-day hold, so he asked it to just be held at the post office, contacted the milk and butter deliveries and put that on hold. In fact, he left a note saying, "We're going away. Please skip over our next several orders."
Yeah.
He did this and he left this notice to them, and he contacted the post office about the mail because he knew that the paper boy, the mailman, the milkman would take notice if newspapers stacked up outside or orders weren't brought in, like if milk just sat spoiled outside.
Yeah.
And he didn't want to draw any attention to himself or what could possibly have gone on behind those walls. So he canceled those. Then he contacted the children's schools and told them that due to an unexpected family situation, all children were going to be out of school for quite a bit of time. They didn't know exactly when they'd be back, but they needed to go down to, like, I think they said North Carolina.
Okay.
He lowered the heat in the home. remember that this is November in New Jersey, so it's cold out and it's only going to get colder. And then we have the morning of November 9th. The milkman was making his rounds in the neighborhood delivering milk and butter and arrived at the List Mansion for their delivery, which they got every week.
Yeah.
And this is where he found that note. So we're kind of putting the pieces in. He's already drafted up all these notices. He's contacting all of these places that need to be contacted to let them know that you shouldn't expect to see any of us for a while.
Okay.
But when the milkman arrived, he found this note saying that the family was on vacation. So if we consider that if any of these people had compared notes, you would have had the postman and milkman being told that they're on vacation. The schools would be told there was an emergency. And as we'll find with John's job, also a family emergency.
Okay.
After the kids left for school that morning, he went to Helen as she made her morning cup of coffee. At 9 a.m., he pulled a 9mm handgun and shot his wife less than 2 feet away.
Oh my gosh.
She was shot through her jaw. She fell to the floor, but she didn't die right away. He shot her several more times until he was sure she was dead.
Okay.
This is bright and early. She's probably still in her gym jams. She's just making a cup of coffee. Their relationship was not ideal right now. In fact, I'm sure they didn't even acknowledge each other in the kitchen. But he didn't walk in and intend a conversation with her.
Yeah.
He didn't have anything to say. In fact, I think he was pretty content on never hearing her voice again.
It sounds that way.
As she lay bleeding and eventually she died, he then didn't miss a beat and he headed upstairs to the third floor of their home where his mother was in her kitchen. His mother, Alma, was 84 years old. She was fixing her morning cup of coffee.
And it's all during coffee time, man.
Yeah, don't talk to me before I've had my coffee. John should have had coffee that morning.
Yeah, he should have.
It's like, you're not acting like yourself. Should have had a Snickers. You know, that kind of thing.
Not except him when he's caffeine hungry.
Yeah, significantly worse. Because his mother was facing him.
Oh, man.
When he shot her above the left eye. Her face was frozen in horror, and there are photos of this that you can see where you know that the last thing she saw made her feel scared and confused. Oh. And that is just what is frozen on her face in death, which is horrifying. But with that, in a matter of minutes, John had murdered his wife and his mother, and the kids were likely just getting to their first or second class. Having no idea that mom and grandma...
Right.
Not okay. After killing his mom, Alma, he went back downstairs to deal with Helen's body.
Okay.
He dragged her body from the kitchen to the ballroom, leaving a 40-foot, or 12-meter, trail of blood behind him. He threw up in one of the mansion's many bathrooms, because I'm assuming the sight of what he'd done, and then he cleaned up the blood and tried his best to tidy up. He emptied his mother's bank account, taking the last bit of money that she ever had.
Cool.
He had a meeting with his new boss, but he had called and canceled that, saying he needed to go to North Carolina as his mother-in-law was ill. And they were like, do what you gotta do, take care of what you need to, you know, we'll reschedule, we'll see you later. But they wouldn't see him again. And then his plan started to go wrong, because he intended to kill his mother and his wife, obviously. And he did plan to kill the kids too, but the kids just weren't following the plan they didn't know existed.
That was a little...
shits.
Yeah.
Because Patty wasn't feeling well that day, and she actually called home and asked to be picked up.
But... oh, it's my murder day.
Yeah.
What an ass.
Probably okay. Exactly what he said. He picked her up around noon, and the pair drove home in silence. Remember that Patty does not think that her dad likes her.
No, she thinks he's going to kill her.
She is afraid. And maybe she just thinks he's frustrated because he's been like put out that he had to come get her. Yeah. And remember, she probably thinks he came from work.
Right.
And he's, of course, dressed in a suit and tie. When wasn't he?
Fucking guy. Yeah.
Once he parked the car at home, he was quick to head inside and was sure to be in the house before she was.
Yeah.
Then she entered the house, and as she closed the laundry room door, he shot her point blank in the back of the head.
Oh my gosh.
She was the only family member who didn't see the shot coming. She died quickly, which thankfully, I mean, is the all of these deaths are awful. But she didn't know what was happening, and then it was over.
Right.
So she just was there, and then she wasn't, versus everybody else was fucking terrified.
Yeah, cause they all saw it.
She died quickly. She bled out. And her body was also dragged into the ballroom and put on a sleeping bag laid next to her mother. So he is gathering. He is making, like, a grave site.
That's horrendous.
In the ballroom of the home. Really odd, this part too. So he mailed himself a letter with a key inside, and this was to be delivered that day. So he either went out like that morning or the day before and had something like priority shipped to himself. Odd. Okay. I don't totally get why, but we will talk about this, because weirdly this letter gets delivered while he's still there.
Okay.
So it was like, why the fuck did you mail it?
All right.
But anyway, while he was out, he'd been draining his mom's accounts like over time, but now he cashed in her savings bonds and any other things that she had of value. So
okay.
He's emptied the accounts, but now he's like squaring everything up. Like every little bit of money that he can scrounge up, he's doing.
Taking, yeah.
And I mean, really, he took them for himself because, like, what does she need them for, right? I know. His youngest, Frederick, called John and asked for a ride home from school. So John picked him up, and again, in silence, he was sure to get in the house before him. Now, Frederick, he was 13. The baby, and arguably the sweetest of them all. But once Frederick entered the home, John fired a single shot at his son, which killed him instantly. He placed the body again on a stupid fucking sleeping bag. Don't get the point of this at all. But he positioned him with Helen and Patty.
What's fascinating to me is that he's taking the time to do this setup afterwards.
Mm-hmm.
Like, he can somehow wrap his head around, like, they can be together. And I don't know what the fucking significance of it being in the ballroom is, if there is any, or if it's just, like, a convenient place. But, like, just really fascinating to me that he can be this callous and then also say, well, at least I'll let you rest there with your family.
It is odd, and I don't understand the, like, symbolism behind it, because a ballroom, you think, is, like, where people come to gather and celebrate and party and dance or do whatever. And this is, like, the most morbid ballroom gathering there could be.
Right.
And maybe it's in spite of Patty's, like, Halloween party that she had, you know, the holiday that he hated and how he completely wiped out and embarrassed himself.
Yeah.
Maybe it's because that's where her party was. Like, there's some right. symbolism here that if I could ask him, I would, because it just doesn't seem to make a whole lot of sense because they are on display.
Right. Yeah.
But he also didn't want them found right away. But when they were found, there'd be no doubt about what happened.
Right.
You know, they weren't each in their bedrooms and somebody would have to go looking. There was a trail of blood as the bodies were dragged into position from different directions. Like, that is haunting. Which is, I imagine, exactly how haunting it was when John's son, John, mm-hmm. came home.
Ugh.
Because he is the last to arrive. And he wasn't expected because he was supposed to have practice after school, I think for soccer. But it was very cold that day and practice was canceled.
Okay.
But then there are some sources that say that John actually went to John Jr.'s soccer game, cheered him on, and then brought him home.
Okay.
I'm saying John Jr. and John Sr. It's not that his son, John, was actually named exactly after him, but just to try to make it a little bit easier to explain this, I'm going to call them that. Either way, though, John Jr. came into the house and likely noticed the blood stains.
Ugh.
And then he saw it. He saw his dad aiming the gun at him.
That makes me so mad.
And it seems that John Jr. is the only victim here who saw it coming and had enough time to react. Oh. All the others were essentially like frozen in horror, right? His mother, Helen, saw it. She was shot in the mouth.
Right.
Patty didn't see it. Frederick came home and got shot in the head.
Yeah.
But he saw it. So each of them, besides Patty, saw it but couldn't do anything. Now here comes his middle son.
Right.
His middle child. His namesake. And he fought back.
Oh.
It was a battle between senior and junior. John Jr. fighting his dad for all it was worth, trying to run from him because he was terrified, which is an understatement. The first shot that John fired went into his son's back and wounded him, but he still kept trying to fight. So then he was shot again, but he just wouldn't die. It took 10 shots to kill his oldest son.
Oh my God.
10. In a matter of hours, John List had murdered all 5 family members. And all but Alma were arranged in the ballroom.
Was Alma still on the 3rd floor?
She was.
That's also a very curious statement.
Oh, we'll talk about that too.
All right.
On November 9th, 1971, John claimed the lives of his mother, 84-year-old Alma List, his wife, 45-year-old Helen List, his daughter, 16-year-old Patricia List, his son, 15-year-old John, and his youngest son, 13-year-old Frederick.
Oh my God.
Wiped out in one day. It said that he prayed for forgiveness on his knees in the ballroom. Then he dusted himself off, I imagined, fixed his tie, and carried on. He contacted Patty's drama teacher, Ed, and let him know that Patty would be missing some rehearsals as there was a family emergency. He called their pastor to tell them that they'd be missing church as they'd be in North Carolina, again with the ill mother-in-law. And then John wrote letters. He wrote letters to family members like his sister-in-law. He wrote one to his boss. And he wrote a letter to his pastor that is especially wild. Here are some parts of that letter to the pastor. Quote, "After it was all over, I said some prayers for them, for the hymn book. That was the least I could do. I know that many will only look at the additional years they could have lived, but if finally they were no longer Christians, what would be gained?" Meaning,
yeah.
I mean, they could have lived, but if they didn't do it the way I wanted them to do it, what the hell's the point? He also wrote, quote, "Also, I'm sure many will say, how could anyone do such a horrible thing? My only answer is, it isn't easy, and was only done after much thought."
Oh, good. So, it was only done after I thought about it a lot and decided I wanted to, still.
Only with meticulous forethought and planning.
Yeah.
Did I land on the answer that everybody I know needs to die? Yep. After listing all of his reasons, not having money to support them, his daughter wanting to be an actress, which was like the most satanic thing you could do. Which is hilarious because what did I just say earlier?
Oh, I'm doing Hail Marys as we speak.
His wife wasn't going to church anymore, them losing their faith. He also wrote, quote, "If any one of these had been the condition, we might have pulled through. But this was just too much. At least I'm certain that all have gone to heaven now."
Sure. That's how that works.
And in what has to be the worst part of this whole letter, and this is the postscript, okay? He wrote, "P.S. Mother is in the hallway in the attic, 3rd floor. She was too heavy to move."
Bitch. Oh, bitch.
In an effort to bring some kind of levity to this monstrous person in this horrific scene, this has got to be reading her for filth. Is it not? This is in the same vein to me that as if like you put my real weight on my missing flyer.
Yeah.
Like, don't ever. You fucking shave 15 pounds off or don't even fucking bother. That's, you know what I mean?
You don't even think she's get an egg.
I would just simply never come back. Like, it is just, if someone said, by the way, I left her upstairs because she was too fucking fat, I'd be like, you know what? Best to just leave me there, actually. You know,
actually, I agree.
You know what? Like, that just, how nasty. Like, haven't you done enough, John? Haven't you?
What a bitch. Enough for nothing. Like, again, we don't judge. We don't judge on your body size, your type. I don't know. You can be as healthy as a horse and as big as you can be. Who knows? I'm not your doctor. But like, this time period, this was like Twiggy skinny. Mm-hmm. Like, I like heroin chic. Like, that is the sort of pop culture expectation for female bodies.
Mm-hmm. We're heading into diet pills sold at the pharmacy you could buy over the counter.
Yeah, we're right into over the counter speed territory.
You know, like meth.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But for your appetite. Mm. So and then, you know, his mom was like a through and through like 30s, 50s housewife, like probably not a hair out of place. Like, husband comes home to dinner on the table. I'm wearing my heels. I'm wearing my pearls. How are you today, honey?
Mm-hmm.
Our son is in his best suit, as he still fucking is. Wow.
And not that it matters, but she wasn't a big woman.
Yeah.
So it
do you even lift, bro? Do you even lift, John List? Fuck you.
The very last thing you write about your mother, the mother you murdered, by the way, was that she was too fucking heavy to bring down the stairs. So to give directions, head upstairs, take a left, and once you get to the decaying corpse in the hallway, you'll have made it.
If you get to the maggots, you've gone too far.
If you step in something wet and it smells bad, you've gone too far. I don't know why this got me so much, but it just seems like one more way to twist the knife.
Yeah.
And insult. It just, it hit me different and I had to talk about it. But anyway, that letter I mentioned he mailed himself, this letter had a key in it.
Okay.
And it also instructed whoever found the bodies to call the police, which is like, no fucking shit. What did you think they were going to do?
Oh, this is one of those situations?
Yeah, it's when you call. Yeah, that's when you call 911. Yep.
Great. What's the number for that?
And the key that was included unlocked a desk drawer that had all of the other letters that needed to be sent out, which included the letter to the pastor. But
okay.
I don't understand why he needed to mail the letter to himself. Why couldn't you have just left it on the desk? Whoever came in and found the bodies was going to find it. Anyway, just weird. Maybe he just wanted to make sure it was found, and so he thought if it was like pushed through the mail slot, it'd be the first thing someone first thing someone would see upon entering. I don't know, I'm not him. I wouldn't do this. But that's what we got.
Okay.
We know that he called the kids' schools, but his older kids actually had jobs too, so he called their workplaces and let them know that they'd be out of town. But this was after they were all dead, so they should probably be taken off the schedule.
Yeah.
Just like, that's how insane this all sounds. The fact that he could take the lives of his kids and then just call their workplaces and say, like, don't expect them for a few weeks.
Like, at that point, give them the notice. Like, don't, hey, we're moving.
Rewind it a little bit more. Don't have fucking killed them.
Listen, I'm with you on that.
But where we are now. Now we're in this room.
But okay? Now we're at an extra level of assholery where he's like, I'm gonna let him find out.
He made dinner. Don't know what he made. Wish I did.
Ew.
He slept.
Ew.
And then before leaving the mansion for the last time, this is when he lowered the thermostat.
Oh, like, to make it smell slower. Save money, maybe.
Could be. I mean, would either one of them shock you? No. To save money with his budget?
He's got a tight budget.
Okay. I don't know. I should also mention that sometime before he left, or even before the murders, John had dug out all family photos and destroyed them, or at least destroyed the photos of him.
Oh.
This matters later, but worth noting the preparation here. He got in his car, left his home for the last time. He never, ever went back. Drove to JFK Airport in New York, left his car, and disappeared into the wind. And I want to pause here to just analyze the hypocrisy, because John essentially treats his religion like a buffet. He takes what affirms his opinions and he abandons and disregards what contradicts him. But doesn't that mean he doesn't truly subscribe to it in the first place?
Yeah.
He believed his daughter was dressing like a quote-unquote whore because she wore jeans and maybe a tight top or two. But those principles didn't apply to him when he had sex out of wedlock and may or may not have gotten Helen pregnant mere months into dating.
Well, yeah, because, like, he's not a sinner for that.
Thou shall not lie, but he lied to his wife and his kids and his mom about his job and his income and their financial security. Thou shall not steal, but he emptied all the money from his mom's accounts before he took off. Divorce is a sin, but isn't murder arguably a worse one? By doing what he did, didn't he deny any of them the opportunity to save themselves, to find their way, to be forgiven?
Yeah.
Didn't that contradict his faith every step of the way? And I don't want this to be taken the wrong way, but don't you also think that he would have taken his own life too if he believed all that he claimed? Don't you think of all of the people we've talked about, he seems to be the least equipped to live in this quote-unquote new world, so to speak? And in fact, it's actually rare for family annihilators to not take their own lives, because they often find that taking their life is the final piece of the puzzle, like they have sent everyone away and also them, and now they will be together. But he didn't do that.
No.
It's almost as if he just wanted to be rid of them without the consequences of being rid of them in a way where they might have agency and autonomy.
How dare you accuse this man who has just murdered his entire family of wanting to be rid of... What the fuck? Like, of course.
Of not being of a man course. Of faith. Of course. Yeah. So now we will catch back up. It's early December. Patty had missed all drama rehearsals for an entire month, and in fact, I believe she even missed the show. Which, missing rehearsals is one thing, but missing the show...
This is not amateur hour, people.
That is different. They're treating you like professionals. But seriously, this started to alarm her friends, because it was odd that she wasn't in school, and it's not like they could send her a text, right? But to miss something that she had worked really hard on, something that she right. was really excited about, and not just that she missed it, but she hasn't been heard from before or after it.
Right.
It is just odd. Weeks passed. Nothing. No word from any of them. The drama teacher, Ed Iliano, he took a ride over to the List home. And sources, again, vary with this. Some say he found an unlocked window when he climbed through.
Okay.
Others say he just peeked through the windows. Some say he never went up to it at all.
This is the teacher that Patty told she was afraid her dad was going to kill her, right?
Yes. This was the only trusted adult that she had confided okay. in. Correct.
All right. At least it's following up somehow.
But if we do believe that he went into the home, it said that he found the bodies, which is horrifying. And then he drove home in silence and in shock by what he'd just seen. And he didn't say anything for 2 days. Like, it changed him, what he saw.
Yeah.
He then went back, but this time neighbors saw and called the police about someone, like, breaking into the List home. But other sources said a well person's check was called in by some of the neighbors after none of them had been seen in a while. So, was it a well person's check? Was it a, I think someone's breaking in? I don't really know.
Okay.
But we do know that police did finally enter the home in December. And this is where I left you in part one. After gaining entry to the home, the officers were met with a horrid smell. In the kitchen, they found the checkerboard patterned floor was streaked in dried blood. And there was blood on the walls. That smell, it grew stronger as they walked from the kitchen down the hallway toward the ballroom, a large streak of blood leading the way. They also noticed that the home, while it was 19 rooms, had very little furniture, which initially made them consider maybe the family was in the process of moving, maybe they'd been packing up. But in reality, the real reason was that they just couldn't afford to furnish their home because they spent too much money on getting the home.
Yeah.
So it permanently looked like they were in between houses, either about to move or just moved in.
Yeah, that's always the hardest part of like big homes, is that you have to fill them.
Yeah, and trust me, I can clutter a space like you wouldn't believe. You give me a room, I'll fill it.
But 19?
19, when you are net negative.
When you can't even afford the room to fill the room, let alone all 19 of them?
Yep.
That's hard.
So, not great. As they walked further in the home, they noticed it was just as cold inside as it was outside. And later they would realize that the heat had been turned off. They walked further and the home was eerily silent, save for classical music playing over the speakers.
Ugh. Sorry, I don't know why I hate that. I hate that.
If I were making this movie, and movies exist on this and I haven't watched them, maybe this is how they did it. But my movie, my opening scene would be panning over the checkerboard floor in the kitchen with the bloodstains and like tracing some up the wall, up to the ceiling with that classical music in the background. Just so eerie.
Terrifying.
So fucking eerie. Terrifying. And this was, classical music was John's music of choice. In fact, to him, there was no other music worth listening to. It was classical music or bust, okay?
So, which is crazy because Hillsong United makes a banger of a worship song.
But the fact that it was like he played his favorite music as he just left his family to decompose in the room that they never treated as a real ballroom because they never got close enough with other people to host anything.
Oh, it's just so sad.
It is. It's awful. And there's all these different blood trails leading to it because each body was dragged into their spot.
Ugh.
So they keep moving. They find the bodies. Their bellies were all distended and bloated and they were infested with maggots and they were secreting liquids and the smell was putrid. It was something out of a horror movie. They also found, though, that the killer seemed to have made an attempt to clean up a little bit because trash bags contained bloody towels and bloody newspapers, and now these were all hardened in a dark brown color, but it did show that there was some attempt to clean a little bit. Then the letters were found where John had admitted to killing his entire family. I'm pretty sure they had an idea because he was the only one not there.
Yeah.
But they found his letter completely admitting to it and spelling out all of the reasons and that it wasn't just one reason, it was all of them. And had it been one reason, it wouldn't happen. But because it was all of them at the same time, after spending so long thinking about it, he arrived on the conclusion that they all had to die.
I'll take premeditation for 500, Alec.
Mm-hmm. The hunt for John List was on. I mean, these law enforcement officers were motivated to get him. This was the first murder case in Westfield, New Jersey in 8 years.
Holy cow.
And it was a family annihilation. The scene stuck with those first responders for the rest of their lives.
How could it not?
The state of the bodies alone, but then considering that 3 of the 5 victims were children. I mean, that changes you. Remember when I said John List was the human form of shitty oatmeal, plain jello, and unsalted rice cakes?
I do.
Do you remember that?
Finally.
Okay, so here's the proof. The two things they knew about John List, they said, you gotta know, are two things that they figured he couldn't go forever without, and this was what they'd use to find him. The first were his glasses. He was terribly nearsighted and needed to change his prescription often.
Relatable.
So they put flyers out at optometrist offices all over the country. Like the FBI was involved. Holy cow. They went ham. But you want to know the other thing?
What?
That they just knew he couldn't live without? Hemorrhoid cream.
Yes. Oh, I love karma.
They had flyers in every pharmacy, probably right next to the Preparation H. Just hoping that someone would clock this guy. I mean, talk about a pain in the ass, huh?
Oh.
I mean, you might say his leather Cheeto was the fire hot flavor.
Oh, flaming hot Cheeto. Yeah.
You might call it an anal speed bump. An asteroid. A booty bump. I had to crack a joke. Get it? Crack.
Yeah.
Crack it. Get it?
Oh, crack kills.
But it was like there was no other identifying quality about him other than shitty eyesight and ouchy butthole.
Shitty eyesight and shitty shit?
Yeah, just yeah. That's what he had. They were like, this guy has hemorrhoids the size of balloons.
Oh.
And his glasses just get thicker by the year.
You know what, though? Thinking back on it, and this is not, of course, to make light of this. This is horrendous. But
no, but we need levity here because I'm going to cry if we don't.
But maybe that's where all of the contradictions come in. Maybe his eyesight, like his glasses just weren't up to date. So he was just misreading the entire Bible.
Yeah, you really had to stretch for that reach, huh?
Oh, I'm like the Simone Biles of stretching.
Yeah.
Babe.
You might be wondering though, okay, yeah, his eyes and his ass. But what about the church, right? The thing that meant supposedly so much to him, the Lutheran faith. Why not put flyers around Lutheran churches? And you might be wondering that, and you're so right for that.
Yeah.
But the churches wouldn't allow them to put the flyers there because they didn't want to be involved.
Oh.
And a lot of places do that, apparently. But I don't know. I don't know if there's a law against it, but I'd try to put one like on a tree out in front, like just outside the property line. Like, no. Just to like make people look at it.
Well, like I understand why priests have some sort of like some version of confidentiality in confession.
Oh, you just wait because we're going to talk about that next part.
But even that, I'm kind of like, I don't know. There's a lot of people in the Bible that are in jail or do prison time. Rightly or not, there's a lot of people that do.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think that that's necessarily like a heavenly right that you don't have to, you know, deal with the...
You can certainly access your faith from a cell.
In fact, a lot of people did. A lot of people were divinely inspired and wrote parts of the Bible through that. So that actually might be better for his faith.
I mean, that's what I'm saying. The flyers contained sketches of him, but remember, he put a lot of effort into destroying photos of himself. So these sketches were largely of what neighbors, colleagues, and other people could recall of him, which is not exactly the most concrete way to do so.
He also wasn't exactly a very social person, so.
Correct. Remember, it's 1971. You can remove Facebook, Instagram, Tumblr, TikTok, any other mode of searching for and looking at personal photos of people. It didn't exist yet. So this was from memory of the guy who rarely spoke and wasn't up for socializing and small talk that you wouldn't see often and was largely forgettable. How accurate of a description are you really gonna get?
I mean, he had like really thick glasses. His pants always kind of looked like there was like a diaper right around his asshole. Suit.
He always sat on a donut because he just couldn't. He always sat. He like eased himself down into the chair, and then the last inch was like, ugh.
Yeah, can you draw the?
Yeah, can you do that part? So, efforts were made by law enforcement. Of course, this was multi-agency involvement at this point, and they really did try to work together. But despite all of this, they got nowhere because days turned into months, turned to years, and not a single lead was viable. The year after the family was killed there, the mansion burned down.
Oh my gosh.
Someone had doused it in accelerant and set it ablaze, and it burned where it stood. Haunted grounds, no doubt, but regardless, the last piece of John List was seemingly destroyed in the flames, and he ceased to exist. But of course, he didn't cease to exist. John List didn't turn himself in, he didn't take his own life, and he didn't even continue killing. He just began anew.
Are you shitting me?
And that is... I'm just totally kidding. I'm not going to leave you there.
Oh my gosh.
As for where John disappeared to, he abandoned the Northeast. Good riddance. We didn't want you anyway.
You never.
And he relocated to Denver, Colorado, and he purchased a trailer under an alias, Robert Peter Clark, or Bob Clark, as he'll be known. He got the name from a peer in college and decided, great, that's my name now. From the coin shop killer to Kimberly Kessler and the murder of Jolene Cummings to this, we just seem to have hit our stride with stolen and false identities and the strange ways they're chosen. Imagine being the real Robert Clark.
Yeah.
Having maybe shared a class or two with the infamous but forgettable John List, and you later find out that for nearly two decades he lived as a version of you.
He stole your fucking name.
How haunting. Craziness. But you know the supposed root cause of the annihilation of his entire family, right? The concept that being poor was a fate worse than death somehow, and... well, enter the irony. Because guess who's now poor?
Yeah.
Guess who quickly burned through his remaining pennies, the accountant who couldn't account, and became exactly what he was afraid of, or so he claimed. Was it really ever about that? I don't know. But it is important to note that John never thought he was going to get away with it. He relocated to Denver, but he imagined that within a matter of days or weeks, like, he'd open the door and the police would be there, like, he'd be swatted.
Yeah.
But then those days and weeks kept going. Hmm. And then they kept going. They came and they went.
Hmm.
And he was still a free man.
Hmm.
And John breathed a little easier and he stood a little taller. And he actually figured he could have a life. He bought that trailer. He did, under this alias, with straight cash that he had from emptying his mom's accounts, his accounts, any other savings bonds, anything else worthy of cash, cashed all that in. And slowly, over time, he began acquiring the bare minimum. He was eventually able to buy a fridge. He bought a stove. Wow. Finally, he bought a bed. In his spare time, he read his books. He kept his space very clean. And he settled into life as Bob Clark. John found work wherever he could and found himself working as a cook at a Holiday Inn. Though he was still pious and, I'd argue, very easily offended and strict-natured, these qualities seemed to lend themselves well to this work because he was likable enough to his colleagues. And because he was so organized and managed his time well, he became really good at handling, like, the dinner rush where other people might get stressed out and kind of frazzled. He could manage it, and he did it well without causing a big thing and without, like, getting mad or having words with people, because he just largely didn't say it. He thought things.
Oh, for sure.
But he wasn't saying them. He got the job done and he was shockingly successful. And why couldn't he have just been a chef and not a killer? I want to rip my hair out over it. But get this. One of his most valuable assets was his ability to handle the most pressure. Which is hilarious, given that it was the pressure that he couldn't handle before.
I have an eye twitch.
Mm-hmm. The restaurant was full and orders were piling in, and not only could he keep up with the demand, but he did so with ease, and he even dealt with mishaps on the spot.
Whoa.
He actually developed a new menu item on the spot. And then they, because, like, he had to whip up a meal. He whipped it up. And then they were like, you know what? This is a special now. And they added it to the menu because it was so good. Like, he didn't do any of that in the equivalent of his accounting world.
No!
Like, he didn't set precedents or introduce new ideas or bring people together. He was off-putting and weird and could not foster professional relationships, which you really need to do.
Yeah.
The most stressed out, uptight, pearl-clutching if-he-only-wore-pearls guy was able to handle the stress of a restaurant kitchen when others struggled with the task. Fascinating.
Maybe. Maybe he's fried, though. You spend your whole life, or not life, obviously, but you spend this whole era of your life waiting for the police to show up at any minute. Maybe any stress feels like nothing in comparison.
It could. But fast forward 4 years from the murders to 1975, and John felt comfortable enough to join church again.
What?
Incredibly ballsy, considering. And not only was he attending church, he was attending events. He was, dare I say, socializing.
What?
Crazier than that, not only did he attend events and was he socializing, but he went to singles events.
Johnny. You know,
to like date and meet people.
Johnny boy, shut up, go home.
And it was there that he met recent divorcee Dolores Miller. Can you see the parallels? They met at this event. They seemed to hit it off well enough. But Dolores wasn't like smitten for John. I don't think she had butterflies. I think she thought he was fine. But he pursued her and pursued her some more. Not forceful, but consistent. And soon they were indeed a couple.
Huh.
Does that not sound at all similar to how he was with Helen, meeting her at some event out, finally, yeah, like leaning into some kind of social thing where it wasn't fireworks and butterflies at first, but it was easy enough and seemed safe, so it happened?
Hmm. But, worried for Dolores.
You know, Bob, I thought he was mediocre, but that man, bless him, he wore me down. That's just how I imagined Dolores. You know him.
It's just...
just Bob.
He's got the persistent love.
Yeah.
Really, really, really persistent.
He's hell-bent on cycles, I guess, but when she asked him about his life, he told her that he'd been married before, but his wife died of cancer, and she didn't push much. From 1971 to 1977, John List, aka Bob Clark, worked in restaurants and was successful. But he felt he needed to go back to his calling. He needed to be an accountant again, because apparently, again, he's hell-bent on repeating a pattern. He was trying to get an accounting business. I think it was like a consulting firm. He was trying to get it off this off the ground, but he didn't have enough of his own money to keep it afloat, and he relied heavily on the financial help of Dolores.
Huh.
The patterns. Not that he was dependent on Helen, but like immediately back into financial problems.
Yeah.
And through this, he grew to resent his new wife, just as he'd done with Helen. And the two would make digs and backhanded compliments and, you know, like very happy couple things.
I always pictured someone I could grow old with being someone I could deeply resent and dislike forever.
I just thought that, you know, if I could be sick of you and grow to resent you in the first couple years, that I knew 30 years from now it was going to be even better.
And I really see that for the happy couple year today. You guys, raise a glass.
To Bob and Dolores.
Bobby! Fuck.
Yeah.
But you said he doesn't kill again.
I did say that.
So what, he can just fucking deal with it this time?
Oh, you just hold on to your butt, girlfriend.
My butt is being held.
Well, you might just have to wait till next week. He did begin an office job, not from his business, and it seemed that he was heading toward his old life. In fact, after dating for a little bit, John married Dolores in 1985.
Hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Mazel.
A year after that, he was let go from his office job.
Yeah.
Shocking. While John List had the means to leave the house all spiffy every day and wander the train station and look for jobs, Bob Clark did not have this luxury. And frankly, he didn't want that kind of exposure.
Yeah, it's a little bit out there.
Instead, he got up each morning. I have to assume made a killer breakfast, no pun intended. I mean, he was a chef, damn it. And then sat his ass on the couch because he didn't have a job to go to.
Oh.
Dolores left during the day, you know, to like go to work and someone's got to bring in the income, which left John home alone. And it was during this time he met a woman who would change his life more than any other before.
All right.
And this.
Oh, you mudda.
I'm kidding. We're not going to stop there either. This woman, Wanda Flannery, was an older neighbor of Bob and Dolores, who, for a lack of a better term, was a bit of a busybody.
Would Hell yeah.
totally love to have morning coffee with her and get all the good. She knew the neighborhood, she knew the good tea, and probably was the kind of woman you'd want to keep an eye on your house while you're away. But maybe she'd pass a bit of judgment on what you kept in the pantry.
Yeah, I know who you're talking about.
In this, she's great, and I love a woman who, despite being told no repeatedly, stuck to her true gut instinct, and we'll see just how impactful that is.
And this is why gossip is important.
See, Wanda befriended John, or maybe John befriended her, or as I should say, as she knew him, Bob.
Right.
But she would see him get all ready every day and put on a suit and tie and go nowhere fast. And she probably felt a little bit of pity for him. She probably felt a little bit bad, like he's a little bit lost.
Yeah.
They became friendly since they were both usually home. And something about her, she'd want to chat. And as you may recall, John does not want to do that.
This man got no appetite.
He wasn't before the murders because he found it useless, and post-murders, there's just more on the line. He can't risk that.
Right.
So Wanda found this odd that he seemed to share little to no details about his life before he met Dolores. And this man was late 40s, 50s, lived a whole life before meeting her, and the only detail he was willing to give up was that he was married, his wife died, she was ill.
Okay.
And that's it.
And that's all he has to say about that.
It's true. Wanda, a girl's girl, no doubt would have a true crime podcast, and I know I'd be listening to it every drop day.
Oh, yeah.
I also know I'd be rating it 5 stars and leaving reviews and telling friends because, you know, that's just what you do when you love a podcast.
Oh, for sure, for sure.
I heard that from a friend. Anyway, Wanda picked up an issue of the Weekly World News in February 1987. The Weekly World News was a tabloid that covered some wild shit like aliens, mysterious animal species, sensationalized news like to the 10th degree. But I'll actually let them introduce themselves just in case you're new to it. This is from their current website. Weekly World News is the world's only reliable news.
Sorry.
We offer the highest quality investigative journalism on the planet. Weekly World News began as a print publication in 1683, growing daily ever since. Weekly World News has the most educated, loyal, and dedicated readership in the history of news. Throughout history, the smartest people on Earth have been loyal readers. Weekly World News is the authority on aliens, mutants, conspiracy theories, biblical prophecies, health cures, and wayward politicians.
All right.
Weekly World News is the only publication in the world to cover the exploits of Bat Boy, Manigator, the Lake Erie Monster, PhD Ape, Plod the Alien, Itty Bitty Elephants, Bigfoot Hooker, and many, many other things that the mainstream media refuses to cover.
Oh my God. Bigfoot Hooker.
They pay.
I love Bigfoot Rugby.
They paint a picture all of their own, so I'll leave you with that. But Wanda, she was one of us, and she picked that up.
Yeah, she did.
In this particular issue, as Wanda pored over the pages, I so badly want to imagine her sitting in a chair with an ottoman in front of her, her legs crossed to the side, as she flips through the pages with a glass of wine in one hand.
Oh, yes, Wanda. That's my Wanda vision.
Yeah, completely how I'm picturing it. Could be not that at all, but a girl can dream. One story caught her eye, though, and it was titled The Perfect Crime. It was the story of a man named John List, a husband and father of three from Westfield, New Jersey, who murdered his entire family and disappeared without a trace. While Weekly World News was, as you may have guessed, often sensationalized rumors, wild theories, conspiracy stories, there were hints of truth throughout. And right. This little piece on John List was one of those parts of truth. A sketch of John was included in the magazine. And Wanda became positive that the neighbor she knew as Bob Clark was in fact John List.
One of us. One of us.
Not just from the sketch, though. I mean, it was pretty accurate. It was actually, it looked a lot like him. But also because he was described as the same age as Bob Clark and described as a hyper, over-religious man who had financial problems despite being an accountant. She clocked him.
Yeah, she did.
But short of just literally moving away, John didn't do much to conceal his identity. Remember, he relocated to Colorado, but he didn't change much about him. He still dressed in a suit and tie all of the time. His glasses were the same. He didn't even get new frames.
That's funny.
His personality was the same. His religion was the same. The kinds of jobs, the same. Non-existent sense of humor. Easily offended. Strict and rigid. Obsessive and routined. Come on, guy. Notable still is that while he relocated to Colorado, he wasn't on the run in Colorado.
Right.
He wasn't moving from neighborhood to neighborhood and apartment to apartment. He literally found a place, settled, and then moved in with Dolores and was like, we're married now. We live here.
I'm Bob.
He just changed his name and moved a few hundred miles away. And he was like, ah, yes.
That'll do it.
That'll do. He settled in. He got comfortable. Maybe he even unbuttoned the top button of his shirt.
Oh my God, scandalosa.
I don't know. I'm not him. But again, we can imagine. But he wasn't hiding. He blended into the background just like he did every day before. He just did it under another name.
Yeah.
So.
How?
Shocking.
Friggin' wild.
It got as far as it did. And what do you think Wanda did with her belief that Bob Clark was John List and John List was Bob Clark?
I have a few ideas.
She went to Dolores.
Yeah, she did.
She got the equivalent of the hey girly DM.
Hey girly, I just wanted you to know, like as a girl's girl,
that your husband Bob, I
don't think he was sleeping with another woman, but she definitely was lying in his house.
But instead of John cheating on Dolores with Wanda, it was, hey, I think your husband, the man that you share a home with, the man that you share a bed with, I think he's responsible for the brutal murders of 5 people. And here's the article that led me to him.
Also 3 of those were children and 1 was his mother. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And the last one was his wife. You know the title you have now?
Yeah, just so you know.
But other than that, sounds great. Personally, I think.
If you guys want like a pie. You just let me know.
Yeah. Wanda did. She brought this to Dolores. She said, I really need to talk to you about something. You need to be aware of this. Gave her her copy of the magazine and was like, you should confront him. Like this, I do think this is true. Please read this over. Look at this. Because she just didn't get it. And Dolores, she laughed.
No.
She laughed and said her husband was the nicest man ever. And he could never do something like that. But behind the scenes, Dolores and Bob's marriage seemed to slip into the pattern that his had with Helen. Dolores grew frustrated with him as she continued to be the provider while he continuously struggled to find and keep work. Regardless of the root of the reasons, they still had financial trouble. You know, like how John had with Helen. The quirky parts of his personality she had once found endearing had now grown tiresome and annoying. And slowly, their relationship began to unravel. And yet, none of it had to do with suspicion of his past, because Dolores wasn't suspicious.
Holy shit.
She's like, no, 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 Wanda. See, that man's name is John. My John. Husband's name is Bob. Easy mistake.
Bob. Long O. I get it.
I see where you're coming from. You had me in the first half.
Bob vacuums with the suit on.
It's just Wanda. It's that kind of thing where she just immediately disregarded it. And maybe Wanda was easy to disregard. Maybe she had a reputation for outlandish shit. I mean, she had stacks of those kinds of magazines all around.
Okay, but the smartest people in the world read them.
I mean, of course, they said it. It's got to be true.
It wouldn't print if it wasn't true.
Seriously, the media could never lie to you. Goodness me.
And that's why you have our sources linked down below. Thank you so much.
Wanda's suspicions remained, even if Dolores never had them. But Wanda was not the only one with John List on the brain.
Ooh.
And that really is where I will leave you.
Oh, you.
And we will pick back up in part 3, where we will finish our series on John List.
This is so good, and I hate it so much.
I hate it too. I'm angry. You want to rough him up?
Yeah.
We will find out what happens if he gets caught.
Listen, I will say I'm excited to hear what happens to our John List Bobby here. Mm. Our John Bobby List.
John Bobby List. I dig that. Yep.
That being said, I have never and will never give somebody a swirly. But the way I want to give this man a swirly and a wedgie so bad, so bad. Just because I know he'd be like, but that's my suit.
I feel like the wedgie is what we know.
Pretty, an atomic wedgie.
Yeah, that is, that's stone cold.
Hanging from the door.
That is
wedgie.
Ooh, but he got an ouchy butthole.
Yeah, well, it's not stone cold if it's burning hot.
Ooh.
Maybe a little practice, you know?
Oh, for hell?
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I meant. Yeah.
Yeah. Because that's where he's going.
That part is in the Bible.
Yeah. Yeah, I believe in that
part. The hell being hot part. Not John List going there. Although.
Correct. May as well say it, though.
It would be nice. It would be nice to have that vote of confidence.
Mm-hmm.
What a fucking guy.
Yeah. Oh, it gets worse.
I'm sure it does.
I forgot to mention it. It gets worse.
You know, hell hath no fury. Like a man with bad karma hath hemorrhoids. And I'm just going to say it. You know, it's not a one-to-one. It doesn't mean if you have a hemorrhoid, you're a terrible person. But it does mean a lot of terrible people I know have had a lot of hemorrhoid cream. And I can say that as someone who had to go through people's medications in an incarcerated-esque setting.
I do know that about you.
I once found 48 tubes of hemorrhoid cream.
That is 47 too many, I have to say.
I'm like, that's more than one for every pocket and every pair of pants you have.
That's so true.
You could have 12 pairs of pants and have a hemorrhoid cream in every single pocket of every pair of those pants.
Well, so I haven't tested this theory, but I have heard that apparently preparation H is actually really great for bags under your eyes. No shit. Maybe he just was like, I can't go to work with these bags. Like, these bags look designer. I can't have it. And maybe it was for that. And maybe you need an industrial amount of preparation H to do that.
Yeah.
Are there slugging, even other
slugging your face with hemorrhoid cream?
I don't want to shade preparation H, but it's the only one I can think of.
Yeah. What's the Walmart brand? Equal?
Equate?
Equate?
Yeah.
Equate Preparation H.
I feel like John deserved like the dollar store
preparation
version.
Equate? I don't know.
Yeah. I haven't heard of her.
Oh my gosh. You know, I love Wanda. I gotta be so real. I love people in little neighborhoods, little apartment buildings who can't mind their own shit. I love it. Getting everyone's business. You tell me why that couple's fighting outside. What do you mean she got no shoes on? What do you mean she got no shoes on? I want to know everything, Wanda. I love a woman who says, you know what, though? Bigfoot? Hooker.
Mm.
I can prove it right here. I want to know that. I want to see that. I want to hear that. You come to me. You tell me what the smartest people in the world are reading. I'm listening.
I want to know Batboy.
What is the...
Say more. Now, is he Batman's son? Did Batman start as Batboy and grow? I have a lot, you know,
is it like
a lot
half
of questions.
Bat, half boy?
Oh, you're so right for that. See, I have so many questions. This is why I need to, I wish I could just consult Wanda and be like, girl, tell me.
Give me the WandaVision. I need to know.
Seriously. Give me that 2020. I gotta know.
I love a woman who stands by her man. Mm-hmm. All right. I will say that. I don't love this man. Wouldn't stand by him. Certainly wouldn't sit by him. But like.
But Dolores would not entertain. Yeah. That. But then also like. I don't know. Is Wanda the wackadoo neighbor? And Bob's been sitting at dinner with Dolores being like, Wanda is out there, honey. Am I right?
Yeah.
Could you pass the salt? And then the next day,
that's Wanda, a little spicy for him.
If Wanda comes over with like, I don't know, maybe she's like scuffling over in her little slippers.
In her slippies.
I love that. She got a matching sweatsuit on. Love that. Yes. Two big glasses. Love it even more.
Wanda and bedazzled over the ass. My words, not hers.
And she's got a stack of these.
Yes.
These magazines, which apparently her home was like decked out. Like,
oh yeah.
Cluttered with piles of these, all different kinds. Not specifically this magazine, but like all of them. And I'm like, girl, the way I could just sit and read all day. I imagine just a cloud of smoke. Like, she smokes inside. You know it.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the walls have changed colors. You move.
Yeah, the blinds are yellow.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You move a painting, it's like you didn't move it. It looks different underneath. Yeah. You know what I'm saying? That's how I picture the room. I don't know.
I also just, I love the hum of a little yappy chihuahua.
And she has one of those fans that's like circulating back and forth, but it makes so much more noise than it's worth because it really doesn't cool you down.
And it's also 40 years old.
Yeah, her mom had it and gave it to her and she couldn't part with it for sure. Yeah.
I love Wanda. I love so much about the people in this that are not John fucking List. And I have
everyone else is fine.
Only that to hold on to.
And here's the thing, and we'll talk about this next episode, and I don't mean this to sound in any way to, like, benefit him, but truthfully, the murders are the only violent thing he ever did.
Yeah.
I mean, he didn't so much as, like, play sports and get, like, roughhouse.
Right.
He didn't have friends to do that with. He didn't... He is the definition of the, like, whisper yell, the, like, ugh, you know, like, that kind of, like...
Will you do the dishes before bed?
Yeah, like, I imagine him, like, mocking, like, under his breath as, like, the extent of the frustration that he would get out.
Yeah.
So it is almost like he snapped. And it is almost like after that, he turned a page and he started fresh. And we'll get into all of that, baby. Don't you worry, next week.
Oh, I'm going to have stuff to chew on.
But it is just something to think about. That of everything we've talked about, and in these last several years since the murders, he has not done anything that we know of that would make you think he was a violent man.
Yeah.
And I will leave you with that today, my friends.
Well, I have to wait with you guys, womp womp, but womp, I will womp. Be here waiting with ya in the meantime. If you wanted to look at the people, the places, the things that we talk about every single episode, including this one, you could do that at our Instagram, which is down below in our link tree, where you would also be able to find our list of sources. They are linked to a Google Doc because, baby, we got many. Mm-hmm. And once you go there, you can see every single thing that we used. You can also find our email if you wanted to send us a fun little tale of your own, a request, a hometown episode, and let us know down below. What are you thinking? What are your vibes? Are you a Wanda stan? I'm a Wanda stan.
I'm a Wanda stan.
How are you feeling about Dolores? Are you worried about her? I'm worried. I know he doesn't do anything technically violent that we know of, but I'm still worried. Mm-hmm. And I also just am curious, like, obviously, send us anything that you're thinking about these. We love to interact with you guys. And if you wanted to send little pictures of your pod pets so we could post them on the Instagram that we have, that you could also look at other people's pod pets, because we have so many good little pod pets in this family.
We have so many good boys and girls.
So many. You could definitely do that. We would love it. And finally, if you wanted to support the pod, you could find our PayPal or our Venmo down below, where you could donate to help us offset some of the costs of recording software or the coffee that we need to research all this for you. And with that, I'm hoping you have enough to do in the next week. And if I look at my clock, that was
about time for true crime.
Bye.
Bye.
I gotta get me on a subscription list for that thing.